Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
But when Kimberly says hit the music, hit the music.
Hit the music, man.
That's all I'm saying. When Kimberly says hit the music, hit the music. Hey, everybody. It's Kai. It is Friday. Oh, goodness gracious me. It's Friday. It is Economics on Tap. We are not, for those of you who are on our YouTube, we're not live because technical glitches and internet and all that good stuff. So, apologies, but we will obviously post the video. It's me and Kimberly. I heard clinks in the glass of the ice cubes, Kimberly. What are you drinking on a Friday?
given this week, I'm drinking tequila. Just tequila.
Oh, my goodness.
A decent amount of
that's
it.
That's some good radio right there. Just tequila.
You.
I was thinking the other day how long it's been since I've had a spirit. I've been doing a lot of beer, but not a lot of spirits. I have to go out and go shopping. I'm having a Stone Tangerine Express Hazy IPA, quite refreshing, on this 100-degree day here in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
In my unair-conditioned shed attached to my garage. Anyway, so it's Friday at the end of a crazed week. I note in the rundown that you once again beat me to the punch on your news of the day, so I picked an addendum. But why don't you go and you set up the general topic, and then we'll go from there.
I mean, the topic is this basically the same topic as yesterday, yeah. But worse. So the Postal Service today warned 46 states that their voters could be disenfranchised by mail-in ballots. And one of our very helpful listeners pointed out on Twitter today that I said we generally used to say absentee ballots, and so mail-in ballots is not really a thing. And they pointed out that in the states that have avoided polling places, like Oregon, I think Washington, their mail-in ballot is a thing. So thank you for that correction. None of us is as smart as all of us. But...
oh, good for you.
In this
did you
case.
See, by the way, the president and Mrs. Trump requested their mail-in ballots yesterday from Florida?
Their absentee ballots for Florida, yes.
Because
in that case,
okay.
in that case, that's absentee.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yes, I saw that. And look, I don't particularly care much about individual people. Yes, there's the rampant hypocrisy of it. There's that. But... the fact that the Postal Service has sent these detailed letters saying that it cannot guarantee that all of the ballots cast for the election will arrive in time to be counted is basically what we were all concerned about. And relates back to our guest from Tuesday who said, look, if you really want your vote to be counted and you plan to do the mail-in voting or the absentee voting thing, you need to get it in very early. So it does not seem like... the Postal Service is going to be a reliable – that we're going to get a reliable fix for the Postal Service in time for the election at this point. And so, again, back to the Tuesday guest, it's kind of on all of us to do what we need to do to make sure that, you know, our franchise is honored.
Yeah. Lots of ways to do it, right? Check your registration. Vote early in person if you want to. And if it's safe, you can actually take your ballot down to your local registrar and do that. Find drop boxes. But it just – it's kind of amazing, this whole thing. This whole thing. Just mind-boggling.
Amazing in a horrible way.
In a horrible way. Mine is related, and it's an item out of Oregon. Where, for the record, they have 100% by-mail voting. And the headline in Oregon News at Oregon Live is, USPS removes mailboxes in Eugene and Portland, cites declining mail volume. And so there are pictures out there, and they've been on social, about Postal Service mailboxes being removed from streets and put away, hauled away in flatbeds, right? You see these flatbeds driving away with four, six, and eight of those big post mailboxes. But here's the thing. So the post office says, and here's the quote from a spokesperson, first-class mail volume has declined significantly in the U.S., especially since the pandemic. That translates to less collection in mailboxes, which in normal times would be credible and legitimately worth sort of giving the benefit of the doubt. The challenge now, of course, is that because it has become so politicized and somehow the United States Post Office, which is in the Constitution, has become a tool of political manipulation, we can't actually believe anything that they say. And that, I think, is a sign of the times. And it just, it really bums me out, you know?
And to amplify the point that you made about, you know, normally people might just go for it. If I recall correctly, this happened a few years ago. They did this big, you know, cost-saving measures at the post office. They cut back hours. And I remember because my mother was saying that they lost the post office drop box in their neighborhood. And lots of neighborhoods did.
Right.
But again, not in this particular environment where more and more people are going to rely on it. And we're talking so much about the election and what it means for that. But this actually matters for people now. One of the many sad things that have been coming out in the last couple of weeks are all of these people who have been waiting on Social Security checks or prescription medicines that are delivered through USPS. And that, in the midst of you know, an economic depression and a health crisis, those are pretty serious things as well.
Think of all the people who run small businesses that depend on the mails. Think for just one second about Netflix, which back in the day, way in the before times, used the mail to deliver actual DVDs. Netflix would not exist today were it not for the United States Postal Service. Right?
I had that service back then. I remember the DVDs. Exciting to get those.
Those little red envelopes, and you're like, oh, I got to get
the red envelope.
There's more in my queue than I want to get, and I can only have two out at one time unless I buy a bigger plan. But that's the deal, right? Netflix is this enormous company now upon which so many of us rely and which generates jobs and content and all that good stuff would not exist without the post office.
And Amazon.
It's not fun.
As well.
Right. Sorry, I missed the 800-pound gorilla. Amazon, right, of course. Yeah.
And even to this day, in many places, I mean, this was why Amazon got its whole, like, fleet of delivery trucks, because it had been relying on the post office for the last mile delivery, which many, many companies still do. You can use, you know, all whatever delivery services you want to, but so many of these companies relied on the postal service for that last mile delivery, especially in rural areas that don't have great service from these big chains because it's expensive. And that, again, gets back to the whole service part. And yeah, anyway, tequila.
So let me ask you this in all seriousness. And we touched on it a little bit yesterday about the platform that you and I have and the ability to reach, look, honestly, millions of people and you know, hundreds of thousands with the podcast, but we've got radio programs and Twitter feeds and all this jazz. What do we do about this?
We as in you and I, or we as in American citizens?
Well, me as in you and me, because we're the ones talking on the podcast.
I think that what we do is we keep talking about it. One of the things that is very easy to do, especially when covering politics, is to sort of rely on the old system of, oh, one side says this, but the other side says that, and, you know, let's give it equal. That's out the window.
Yeah.
There is a standard of what needs to happen to make our democracy function in the way that guarantees the most access for most people. And I do not think it is a political statement to say that as many people as possible, wherever they are in the country, should be able to vote safely, however that needs to happen. And that lawmakers, the people who we pay to run this country, as in our tax dollars, they work for us, should be doing everything they possibly can to make sure that as many people as possible can vote. And if the argument for limiting that access is because they think they'll lose, that's even more reason that more of us should have access.
You saw this piece in the Post last night. I tweeted this out. I'm sure you saw it, where the GOP and the Trump campaign are lining up challenges to mail ballots and all of that stuff. And the conclusion has to be they don't think they can win a free and fair election. Right?
I can't imagine why, what the solid argument is for why more people shouldn't vote other than that. I mean, it's sort of like the gerrymandering arguments that have been made by both Republicans and Democrats over the years. Like, you know, you can't make us We should be able to draw districts according to political lines because that lets us win. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the people who then draw the lines are people like us, and therefore we exacerbate the system. And this is something that has been done with both parties. And structuring politics, people in power structuring politics so that they can stay in power, is as old as politics itself across the world in all countries. And mm-hmm. I think one of the ways that our very flawed founders set up the American system was mm-hmm. to try mm-hmm. to avoid the hoarding of power by people who are not acting in the best interest of the American people. And so, you know, as someone who is on very, very good terms with people who feel very strongly in favor of the president and his policies and some of the things that he does, I want to make sure that they have as equal a right to vote as I do. And right now, a lot of my Republican friends back in Missouri, if they decide to do a mail-in ballot, I'm not sure that it's going to be counted. And that worries me.
Well, so that's the other thing. Sorry, that's the point I wanted to make, but it flew right out of my head because we started talking about something else, and then we'll leave this and move on to something that's less weighty. So 46 states and the District of Columbia have gotten letters from the U.S. Postal Service that their vote-by-mail or absentee ballots will not be able to be delivered on time. 46 states plus the District of Columbia is an overwhelming majority, like 90-plus percent of American voters, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's red voters and blue voters, Democrats and Republicans. Hello? What?
Well, and also the highest risk group in this pandemic is older voters, and older voters skew Republican. So the people who are at the highest risk of going to a polling for going to a polling place and voting in person, who might be the most who might benefit the most from access to mail-in voting, are the people who would traditionally vote more Republican. And I just, I understand the politics of it. It makes me sad. I've been in Washington for a while now, and I still sort of walk around in my bubble that regardless of where you are in the political spectrum, that you still might have good intent and you're trying to do the best you can for
you're not
constituents.
You're not cynical.
I'm a very cynical person.
You are. That's exactly right.
I don't want to believe that people genuinely want to disenfranchise others. I don't want to walk around with that as my filter when I'm interacting with political leaders. But it's hard to see another interpretation in this place.
That's literally that is absolutely the evidence. All right. Whoever's got the buttons under their fingers down in the studios.
But back to it, everybody, check your registration, vote,
do all
those things.
Yes. Do all those things. And listen to our Tuesday show. It was really good.
Yeah. Oh, let me go first because I have another good thing in Washington.
Okay,
pandas.
Okay, go. Okay. Oh, I love
pandas. So, yes, they're so adorable. Actually, in person, not as cute, but still cute in photos. So at the National Zoo here in Washington, D.C., they said today that the female giant panda appears to be pregnant and that a birth of a cub could come as early as this weekend. And it's, for some reason, notoriously hard to figure out if pandas are pregnant, and they usually don't know until, like, the last second. So will I be on PandaCam this weekend? Absolutely. And PandaCam is the greatest. If you don't know about PandaCam, you should definitely – I'm sure there will be a link. It's great.
I love it. My favorite random fact about little baby tiny pandas, they're about the size of a stick of butter when they're born, which just makes their survival just all the more amazing. You're like, oh, my God. Goodness. Yeah. Anyway,
well, that makes
cool.
sense because they make my art
super
melt.
Cool. Oh, that was so good. That was so good.
Thank you. I just came up with it. I'm very proud of myself.
All right. Mine will be super quick and then we'll get on the way because, you know, it's Friday afternoon. So I'm sure you saw after the explosions in Beirut 10 days ago, whatever it was, the horrible, huge, small explosion and then the giant big one. You might have seen some of the pictures of I only saw one of them, but apparently there were two. These brides in a square in Beirut who were getting their wedding photographs taken, and they were in their wedding dresses, and they were rolling video and taking pictures when the explosion happened. And it was – so the videos are just stunning, right? Because you've got these women in these gorgeous gowns, and they're taking their pictures, and they're lovely, and then kablooey, and it all goes to hell. Anyway – So, and it turns out one of the women actually was a doctor, and she the pictures is just, you know, the camera goes kerflooey and everything, but she then gets up and goes into a hospital and starts
triage
treating these people.
Mode, yeah.
And she goes in her wedding gown, and she says in this article in the Post, which I haven't really gotten around to citing yet, but she says, look, my doctor's coat is white. The wedding gown is white. It was all the same thing, just a different context. So she goes in and helps him. Anyway, so there were these two women in the same square in Beirut when the bomb went off, two brides getting their pictures taken. The Post found them, told their stories. Neither the bride nor the grooms were hurt, although many obviously were killed in that horrible explosion. It's a cool little story in the Post. I recommend it to you. It's just, it's a little bit of niceness on an otherwise, you know, questionable Friday here in the United
questionable
States.
Questionable, but here's my sort of Pollyanna take on it. There's stuff that every person can do to make sure that the worst doesn't happen. We are not powerless to let all this stuff just roll over us. So, you know, democracy is not a spectator sport.
Amen. Amen. We'll give it a beat and then we'll go. We're done. Thanks for listening, watching, for those of you who actually are going to watch this video. Apologies for the whole live stream thing. We'll figure that out. We do newsletters too, not just audio and radio and all that good stuff. Marketplace.org/newsletters. And we are back on Monday. Is Molly back on Monday? I think Molly's back on Monday.
Yes. Oh, by the way, thanks for the week. It's been fun. Thanks for the
2 weeks. Thank you. You've
been
awesome.
This has been a blast.
Look, here's the deal. People like you better than me, so that's good. I'm all right. Maybe I'll just take more time.
It's because it's a novelty of it.
All right, we're done.
All right, Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner. Ben Hethcote produces the video with the help of our video intern, Ethan Parrott. And Erica Phillips writes our newsletter and the smart speaker skill.
Drew Jostat was in charge down in the studios. Today, our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. The senior producer is Bridget Bodner. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves, although she's off, so I don't even know if we should have put her in the credits, really. You know, she's on vacation.
She still is working in spirit, I'm sure, because none of us ever really shut off.
That is true. That is true.
Cheers, Kai. Have a good weekend.
All right. Cheers, Kimberly. Thank you so much. We'll see you soon.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.